living on the side of love, standing on the side of love, being on the side of love. Last night, I had a wonderful evening with three diseased Petri dishes called grandsons who came to our house to have dinner, to spend the night, to cough, to sneeze, to share all of those vital things that we get from our grandchildren. So I may be doomed, Marlies, in terms of Tuesday and our discussion of Lincoln, which, incidentally, if you didn't make reservations for, don't come. We are sold out on our Lincoln discussion, unless I don't show up and there will be an extra. It depends on the incubation period of all this stuff. They sounded terrible, and we had the best time. The little one, may I be excused? No. 2 minutes later, may I be excused? No. If you ask again, you're not going to get dessert. When, you know, part of love is terror. I'll get to that later. And hostage taking and taking dessert hostage is one of the kinder things that you can do. And then we finally had to convince them, you know, we're sitting here because you're more interesting than the television. We'd rather hear from you than hear the commercials, than see the stuff that's on there. What you did on your trip to San Francisco, we want to hear about. What you're studying in school, we want to hear about. It was wonderful. It was great. It was full contact, with all the ramifications, family. It was sitting and eating and crying and arguing and the fighting and telling them, you know, when you get this rambunctious, someone is going to cry. No, we won't. 5 minutes later, he hit me and make him apologize. I didn't do it on purpose. How can I apologize? And then we're off on a philosophical question. Can you apologize for an accident? What's he, afraid of litigation? I mean, it's just, it was just really, really fun. And that's family. And it involves fighting and crying and hugging and making up and all of those things. And that is love. My family is, and I don't mean this in a sentimental way, my family is made up of old people and young people. And by old people, I mean several standard deviations older than I am. And by young people, I mean a year and a half old. My family is made up of white people and brown people and black people and beige people, of Asians and Hispanics and blacks and whites and Jews and Muslims, yes, in my family, and Christians and hardcore humanists and softcore religious humanists, and all of those categories that so many people use to keep us apart from one another, instead of saying, wow, look at this diversity, isn't it grand? I don't have to be of the same political persuasion. I don't have to have the same religious poetry. I don't have to have the same taste in music. I don't have to come from the same area or nation or tribe to be part of a loving environment. And that just is empirically true. It isn't aspirational. It isn't pie in the sky. It isn't someday. It's right now. That's how I live my life with my core family and my extended family from all over the world. It's wonderful. Why not be thrilled with our diversity? Oh, incidentally, my family is also gay and straight and all other kinds of sexual orientations. Why not? What's the problem? What's the problem with living on the side of love? What's the problem with standing on the side of love? Why is it that this is a topic for today and a theme for weeks? Because we have so much trouble doing it. Because I guess we are humans, and our traditions that sing about love literally The Psalms sing about love in the Jewish tradition. The Song of Songs sings about very earthy love in the Jewish tradition. Paul reminds people that you can preach before multitudes, but if you have not love, you are nothing and empty and a sounding brass. The Quran reminds us that if you do not give of that which you love, you will never achieve righteousness. All of our religious traditions and many of our secular traditions say love is a great thing. And you know, my love is a great thing. God's love is a great thing, but you may not qualify because you might be from a different tribe. You might be from a different religion. So I might have to ask your papers. I don't remember Jesus asking for the papers of the Roman whom he healed. I don't remember then the various miracles and healing stories in our Holy Scripture that we were that tribal. But there are places in all of our Holy Scriptures where we are tribal, where we look at the other and say, you're different, you're not one of us, you're wrong, you're bad, and it's usually the same three canards. You are dirty, you are dishonest, and you are oversexed. Those are the three basic canards. And they're historic, and we look at them almost in every generation and in every nation. That stranger that comes over to our shores, well, that's the problem with them, because they're just not quite like us. And every religion, every race, every nation does this, and it certainly doesn't make it right. It makes it tragically natural, which means that if we want to change, we have to look at it. We have to understand that those impulses of us and them are there, and the only way we can face them is by facing them and not being in sentimental denial that, oh, well, we're way beyond that. We don't have racist bones or xenophobic bones or homophobic bones in our bodies. Well, yeah, we do. We're born with them, and we need to look at them, to deal with them, and to ask the why is this a threat and why is this not a blessing question. And I think that's a fairly important question. All of our religious traditions take that love part and then just make it for us and not for them, so that you will get in all of our religious traditions the idea that that stranger is bad, that that immigrant is bad, that that person that does not love as I do, work as I do, look like I do, that person has something wrong with them. One of the very strange things that I find is that everybody believes that they're better than average at almost everything and have a sense of humor, and that other people just don't quite measure up to our standards. And that really seems to me to be a shame. Because when we look at all of the diversity and all the history of diversity, we see the same patterns again and again. People believe in family values. We value the family. And then across political spectrums, we find ways of devaluing families. So that without going into all of the issues of open borders or closed borders and immigration, the vehemence of some of the conversations we hear about them, right now the them is mostly Hispanic, but it's been Irish, and it's been Italian, and it's been Jews, and it's been Poles, and it's been Asians. Right now it's the Hispanics' turn. We'll get through it. We'll get through it. But people are saying, well, you know, send them home. Children who were born here, who've known no other country, well, just send them home, but it's not their home. This is their home, and they're citizens. Well, send their parents home. sending the parents of American children home doesn't seem to me to be exercising family values. It's breaking up families. We look at this and we say, well, but they're taking our education. Okay. We've educated people who are not supposed to be here. Let's throw them out and have them take their education home with them. That's nuts. Why would you take people whom we have invested time and energy and say, all right, take it elsewhere by force? If it's a choice, that's one thing. I want to take it home to my ancestors' home and share that. That's one thing. But it's another thing to say, well, look, we don't like how your parents got here, so all of you are out of here. Doesn't make sense in terms of the animus and the vehemence. We can have, as in a couple of weeks we will attempt, reasonable conversations about guns, nuanced conversations. We can have reasonable and nuanced conversations about immigration. But when the conversations are hijacked by passion and xenophobia, we have a problem. Because we're not seeing the humanity in the other, we're only seeing the other in the other. Now, I am an optimist. This is not a hellfire and brimstone, we're going to hell in a handbasket sermon. I am an optimist. I believe that we will get past this. I believe as a society that racism is doomed, that it is not going to make a difference. Look at our beautiful children, even in this less than completely diverse adult congregation. Look at the beautiful children, whether adopted or whether however they were produced or brought here. We are beginning to look more and more like America. When I go to other religious institutions, even to the synagogue that my three grandsons belong to, I walk in there and it looks like America too, because of adoption and intermarriage and the fact that we are not constraining our love for one another as much by race and ethnicity as we used to. We have made huge progress. We still got so terrible long to go, but we have made huge progress and we will overcome. But it won't be easy and it won't be automatic. The other area of standing and living on the side of love is in terms of gay, lesbian, transgender people. We have made tremendous progress, in my view, and social change in the views of people that are not quite on the same page. But the change, the evolution, has been undeniable. From the sin that dare not speak its name to mainstream and entertainment. From the easy, hateful, homophobic jokes of my youth, and I am ashamed but will confess to you that when I was a young comedian starting out, I had routines that by today's standards would make me not blush but nauseated. But I was a child of that time. And we have come so very far in a relatively short period of time. When I performed my first same-sex union in either 1969 or 1970, it never occurred to me to say no. I want to make clear that I am not bragging and talking about my courage. There is no courage if you're not afraid. Courage is when you're scared and you do the right thing despite what you feel the ramifications are. Maybe I was too naive, but two people came to me and said, will you bless our union? And I said, of course, because the problem with the world is not that there is too much love in it, is that there's too little love in it, and I think we ought to bless it where we find it. And we have made huge changes in this area. We have gone only in the last two decades from in the military, you cannot be gay, to don't ask, don't tell, to theoretically open service. But we still have a long way to go. If you read yesterday, there is persecution and unequal treatment, not simply of gays and lesbians, but of their partners and sometimes their legal spouses. That's not right, and that will change, and this is a social change that will be won, but again, not passively and not automatically. I don't believe in a Marxist automatic theory of history. We have to be involved and not stand by quietly the side of love, but stand up for love, to be actively involved in the affirming of loving people and loving relationships. As much progress as we've made, there are still these crazy things that are going on. In the Anglican Church right now, there in England, they're trying to split the difference between the Ugandan communion, which is highly homophobic, and the United States, which is much more accepting and embracing of gayness. And they've reached one of those incredible compromises, which is we can have gay priests, but in order to be a bishop, you can be gay so long as you don't have a partner and act on it. That's not going to stand. That's not going to make it through the next 3, 4, 5 years, because you can take a principled position against any kind of sexuality, which in some ways Paul does, or you can take a position about love, but trying to split the difference is really hard. And even at the end, Paul says, okay, if you burn, go ahead, get married. But it's better not to. Celibacy really is the best thing, but if you can't handle that, okay. Those are both principled positions. But it's really hard to split the difference with, okay, you can have your sexuality, but we want you to pretend that you're not living it, and please feel guilty and afraid if you try to. This is another area where the outcome is pretty clear. Our children and grandchildren were not raised in the societies that we were raised in, and they are going to see sexuality, ethnicity, race, and denominationalism very differently from the way that most of us did when we were growing up. That we will be able to stand on the side of love and work for the side of love, affirming families of all different kinds, of all different statuses, of all different styles. And we can measure our progress just looking back half a century to when miscegenation was against the law in many states, including theoretically in California up until shockingly recently. Because there are a bunch of people who consistently said, you know, if you're not exactly the same, you shouldn't get married. And then there are a bunch of people who said, well, if you are the same, then you shouldn't get married. And that actually was one of the lines that I used in a wedding service that I did between two guys about 30 years ago, where it's a little bit of a digression, but it might be worth it. You'll let me know. Where I get to my congregation, and I've got one guy, and then I have his mother, and his mother is going, Oi. I said, what seems to be the difficulty? He's marrying a Catholic. The presenting issue apparently being not that he was marrying inside his gender, but outside his religion. They're both fine. Loving one another, however we do it and rationalize it, It is about the quality of the love and the family and the issues of respect, how we honor people of different backgrounds, of different faiths, of different ethnicities, as we try to create societies that are not bound by those old categories. And what is frustrating to me is those categories hurt so many people over so many years and seemed so important at the time, and it's tragic. Because the truth is, wars end. Arguments that seemed important at the time, you wonder, what was that about? Differences and distinctions that were critical to some age and epoch become nothing to the next. But what of the people who suffered during those times of irrational passion? We can have differences. We can have passionate differences, but not make each other from adversaries into enemies. Not see each other as the other because we are different. We are blessed by being different. If we were all the same, we would have nothing but an echo chamber that didn't challenge us to think, to feel, and to love. Tear down the walls. That was one of the songs of the 60s. Joe and Eddie. Tear down the walls. Let my brothers free. Tear down the walls. Let us be together. Let us all come to that dinner table and cook on the side of love and stand on the side of love and share foods and cuisines and coughs and sneezes and fights and laughter and tears and hugs and forgiveness across those artificial categories that we from time to time choose to make important. And what is important at the end of the day is the quality of love that we see, that we make, that we create, and that we affirm. Love is the doctrine that we share.